everyone, and welcome back to Phone Show Chat. It's show 886, it's the middle of March, and it is a revisit this week from Pip Tomlinson from Barcelona. Hello, Pip.
Hello, I'm like the bad smell that won't go away.
You're very welcome to come back, and we'll catch up with what you've been doing and what is going on a bit later in the show. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I enjoyed the title you gave the last show, Pip, was on the Apple Pip.
Oh, yeah. I can't use that one again. In fact, I've got a feeling I've used that twice anyway. So we'll avoid that one. But yes, we'll be straight on with the show now. It's the website is phonesshowchat.uk, two S's in the middle. The MeWe group is where we kind of talk about all the stuff to do with mobile phones and the mobile phone world and what's going on with tech, really. And it is quite an active group over there. So we kind of scoop up most of the news. That's what's the news that's going on in the mobile phone industry. If you're not joined up with MeWe, then follow the links in the show notes and come and join us. Before we get to you, Pip, we're going to have an audio plug-in, as has become the trend these days. And that's really good, because I asked for people to send in bits of audio to talk about the stuff they want to talk about. So the ghost of Steve Litchfield is with us. And he's talking to us now about MagSafe.
At the risk of this turning into Steve's spot on PSC, I wanted to react to something Ted says about MagSafe on phones in a recent show. I forget which one, but I was kind of developing this into a phone show short, but I thought it would work better here on PSC. Now, Apple created MagSafe on phones in 2020, a double ring of tiny aligned magnets, allowing for secure attachment of accessories and alignment for Qi2 wireless charging. This was copied by Google in 2025, as regular listeners will know, for Pixel Snap in the latest Pixel phones, and also by a zillion case makers looking to add MagSafe compatibility to their products and therefore to any phone, for example, in the Android world contained within. Now, I love the system to bits, evidenced by me buying half a dozen MagSafe compatible power banks, the Shift Cam Snap Grip, several MagSafe compatible car mounts, etc., etc. But what fascinates me is that Ted has zero time for MagSafe and sees no benefit to it. And he's not alone in the tech world. I know of others who just don't care. So I'm trying to understand this, and I think I figured it out. MagSafe is designed for phones, which are designed to be used when out and about, commuting to work, day tripping with the family, on holiday. When you're out of the house, the various MagSafe power packs, the ring finger mounts, the car mounts, even MagSafe wallets, they all help enormously. Previously, to top up my phone on the go, I had to take a power bank and a cable and use my phone, for example, on a train with a cable dangling from it. Previously, in the car, I had to mount my phone on the windscreen using a tacky plastic spring-loaded clamp system that was always going wrong and my phone collapsing forwards. With MagSafe, both those problems are solved instantly and in a futuristic way. But Ted and a fair few other tech journalists and commentators don't actually travel far from the house or office. They're surrounded by power sources, cables, screens, and just don't need truly mobile power and mountings. I know, because when I was writing full-time and doing long-form landscape videos, I too didn't have much need for being out and about. I was kept inside for work and looking after my young family. Now, semi-retired since 2022, I'm out of the house a lot more, even on trips with my wife, so I'm actually more of a road warrior than I used to be. Of course, Ted is also an Android fan more than iPhone, and only Google has embraced MagSafe so far in that world, so he's also not had that much chance to try the technology. But I think the truly mobile argument is the most compelling here. I don't love MagSafe because it's created by Apple. I love it because it's a great idea, and I wish more Android phone makers would come on board. There we go. What do you think, Ted?
MagSafe. I mean, for goodness sake, I have never once had... I take his point about me not being a road warrior and fairly static, and I don't need to do stuff at home. MagSafe is probably for travellers and whatever. But even so, even if I was a traveller, I don't buy the whole thing. I think that Apple have just jumped on it to sell gear to people, frankly. And as usual, in this world. All the sheep follow Apple, and the OEMs jump on board. They try hard to create their own version of it, and do so. And so now everyone else is trying to flog accessories. Don't buy it. Also, Steve, don't forget that way before Pixel Snap, the HMD Skyline had a Qi 2 thingy on the back. I just thought I'd point that out. What any thoughts on that, Pip first?
Well, bear, because I'm one of those sheeps. Sheep. I just pluralized sheep. I don't know why I did that. I actually use it every night, you know. I have a Belkin MagSafe 3-in-1 charger by my bed, and it charges my phone, my Apple Watch, and my AirPods Pro at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I wake up in the morning, everything's magically charged and 100%. I'm kind of the opposite. I don't use it much when I travel, for the simple fact that I find it heats up my phone too much. So if I have got one of those Anker MagSafe batteries that snaps onto the back, but I find that it charges slower and it heats the phone up too much. So what I end up doing is just using the cable from the MagSafe battery straight into the USB-C port. But I do use MagSafe a lot at home, so I'm kind of the reverse of that, I guess.
But I don't buy it, Pip, because I've got, right, take my Samsung gear. I've got this stand which plugs in traditionally with a cable, and it's got a Qi thingy on it, and it's got another Qi thingy for my my Samsung Galaxy Watch, and for the headbuds, the headphones, the earphones, and they all sit there. There's no need for any magnets. They just sit there. It's a stand, the same as you just described, except who needs magnets? As if it's
what I would say, sorry.
Go on, no
what
way.
I would say is that at night time, if I'm falling asleep, those magnets are quite handy to... if I'm just plonking my phone onto the side, just to align it so that I don't have to think about aligning it, and it just snaps on and I'm not fiddling around trying to align it, and it does all the alignment side of things for me in the dark, which I do find useful. But yeah, apart from that, I guess unless I was clipping it onto my scooter or something, I probably wouldn't find the magnets that useful.
That is the one use case which I do acknowledge, Steve, as well, is, and I've always said this, that the use case I can see is on a car dashboard, where you don't have to fiddle about with cables. You just clack it onto the car dashboard and it's all set up facing you. And I do buy that. I honestly do. But the rest of it can go. Joe, rescue me.
Yeah, so I think it is nice. It's mostly, like you say, for car attachments and power banks. And I think that use case is good, that it snaps on. I do question a little, did Apple do it for the consumer, or did they do it for themselves in order to increase first-party accessory sales? I think maybe a bit from column A and column B, perhaps. I mean, it's understandable. It's a good business model, and it's done very well, hence other case makers doing it, and loads of other people have followed suit. So like now Pixel do it, and HMD as you mentioned. So I mean, it does make sense, but I personally haven't bought into MagSafe myself. I think it's great for those that enjoy it. Would it be part of my buying decision on an Android phone? Not really. I mean, is it really necessary to be part of the phone now that there's such good accessories and cases anyway,
and big batteries?
And big batteries as well, yeah, definitely. And I wanted to quickly mention, I don't think MagSafe wallets in particular are a great idea. For myself at least, I know it would easily come off as I go in and out of my pocket all the time. It would just slip off easily. Mm. And Steve actually alluded to this in a short himself, which I'll link to. He gave four reasons, which I 100% agree with. So one, they easily come off. All your eggs in one basket as well, which, yeah, if you lose your phone and your wallet all at once, it's not great. Not pocket friendly, and you can't put anything else on it. So if you do have your MagSafe wallet, you then can't put your power bank or something else on it. So MagSafe wallets especially, rubbish to me.
I agree with the MagSafe wallet. I actually have one, and I never take it out of my apartment, purely because I will lose it if I do that, and it has my Spanish ID and driving license, which would be a nightmare to change. However, what it is good for is I stick it on the side down the side of my fridge, because it magnetically sticks and it keeps all my IDs really secure and well hidden. So I do use it as a magnet to stick my debit cards and things on the fridge. So it does have some uses.
Nothing to do with phones, just the fridge.
No. Yeah. I know where my ID is. No, they haven't made one yet.
Oh, dear. So I can see Samsung changing their fridges to have Qi 2 on the side. Not likely.
Honestly, it's a good place to store things, I'm telling you.
Yeah. I use my fridge magnets as well, to be honest. Okay, so there you go. Thanks a lot, Steve, for sending that in. If anyone else wants to send in an audio clip, then please do so. You know where to send it and just get in touch. Gary Clark's written review of the Motorola Signature on the Average Dad website. We'll link into. I always like what Gary Clark does, because like me, he likes the written word, and he's written a lovely review of the Signature, and I in tandem with mine eventually, which we'll come to later. Yeah, really interesting read, and I'll link to that in the show notes. Did you have a look at that, Joe?
Yeah, I did have a quick look. I'm not one for reading much, but I do love the fact that there's great written stuff out there from people like Gary Clark and yourself, which there'll be a link to down below as well. I do love to support, even if I don't like reading, and I utilize AI to become an audiobook for me sometimes.
You don't have to read, just listen. Yeah. And that is getting better, isn't it? I have been playing with that as well, not because I need to, but because I'm interested in the tech, and it certainly is getting better. Yeah.
So, well, when I did read yours, Ted, I could hear your voice in my head.
That's because of the formulaic nature of all my written reviews. People don't need to read them anymore, because they know that apart from the details, much of it will be the same. Anyway, we'll come to that later on. In the meantime, let's come to Pip. Pip from Barcelona, where it's been lagging down with rain for about 3 months, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've had a lot. We've got 9 days of sun, but I've been here 8 years, and twice now we've had emergency alerts not to go to work and don't get on the metro. I think it's from about a year and a half ago. There was that tragedy in Valencia. It wasn't too bad in Barcelona, but quite a lot of people died in Valencia because of the flooding. So they're super nervous about it now. So if it rains a lot, it's don't go out. But I'm on the seventh floor, so there's something seriously wrong in the world if I get flooded.
So has it gone now? Is it back to normal?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, in a weird way, we it was really weird, because we had 2 years of drought, to the point that we were limited to so many liters of water per person per day in our apartments and houses. And then it's gone the opposite way now. The reservoirs are completely full again. So in some ways, it's been a benefit, and we actually needed some rain. It's just it all came at once and too quickly.
Yeah. Well, it's good that you've survived that. I did see some news coverage, and it sounded as though it was quite hectic in some places. And the last time you were on, in I think last September, I think you were in a heat wave, weren't you?
Yeah. It's, I mean, the summer, it gets to about 36 degrees here.
Yeah.
I'm actually, I might be moving back to the UK later this year. So we'll see.
Yeah,
and this is perfect now. March is perfect, because it's about, I don't know, 17, 18 degrees, which is perfect for me.
Right. Okay, that's cool then. Well, anyway, welcome to the show, and great to have you back. And what might have changed since you were on last? I think when you were on last, it was just Joe and I, wasn't it?
There was four of us last time.
Oh, was
time,
there?
I think.
Okay.
Was it Chris Kelly was on, I think?
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
And anyway, what I was going to say was the way we approach it now is the floor is the guests. So you take as much time as you want to talk about whatever topics you want, throw them out there, and Joe and I will try and intelligently chip in and have a discussion with you about them. So, floor is yours.
Yeah, I'll just preface this by saying I'm recovering from laryngitis, so I'm sorry if my voice sounds absolutely terrible, but it is getting better. I think I mentioned in the show notes, I'm sort of 6 months on now with my iPhone 17 Pro Max, and I think I have said before, I'm still not using the camera button. I just never use it. I wish I did, because I feel like I'm missing out on a feature that could be great. And I know some people, one of my friends in England uses it a lot, and he swears by it. But I think The only thing I use it for still is opening the camera. Apart from that, actually physically taking a photo, I never use it.
Just to remind us, the camera is not like the Sony Xperia, which is a two-stage half press and then focus and then fire. It's just a
you can do that as an option. You half press it down and it will focus, which is probably something I would do, lock the focus, which is something I would probably use more. But it's one of those things that you just never think about. The only thing I can compare it to is I think it was a Samsung Note 10. And I never used the S Pen. It was there, and I never used it. And it's kind of similar with the camera button. It's just there. It's ever present, but I never use it.
Yeah.
I mentioned it in my on a Magic 8 Pro review as well, because they've got a camera button on there, which can be utilized as an AI button as well. And I don't really find them that useful. And I mean, I haven't actually come across anyone myself that's utilized them much. So it doesn't surprise me, if I'm honest.
No, I think in a few generations it will be gone anyway.
Yeah,
a bit like the touch bar on the Mac.
Contrary to that, though, going back to what I was just saying about the Sony Xperia, I use that all the time. I completely default to using the shutter button, and maybe it's because it's physical and it's a hardware button. It's just different, but
it's just different. Yeah,
I never consider putting my finger on the screen to take a photograph. It's always on the shutter release.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think because I've had iPhones for so long, it's just muscle memory now to use the screen.
Yeah.
And it's just so hard to change it. It's so hard. I did try when I first got my 16 Pro, but you just end up defaulting to what you're used to, I think.
Sure.
Unless it's something that's really beneficial, and then you learn to retrain yourself. Mm-hmm. But because it hasn't given me that much benefit, I've just never really bothered. But yeah, the battery life continues to be amazing. I mean, I think I said last time, I'm expecting the phone to be similar to my 13 Pro Max when that came out. That was the last iPhone that truly impressed me with the battery life. And then my 16 Pro, it was terrible, to be honest. But the battery life's been great. Like, I've been traveling to the UK and back a lot over the last few months, and just not even having to worry about taking a battery pack. Has been great. It's been really nice. So I've been really impressed with that. Mm-hmm. I said in the show notes, it's kind of much of a muchness, really. We don't get as much excitement in the iOS world and the iPhone world as you guys, because there's a new phone every few, every day in the Android world. But we kind of get excited for a few months, and then it's like anything, you get used to it, isn't it? But I do really like it. I like the screen. I'm glad I went back to the Max. I was wondering if I would regret the size, but I really do like having the Max. In terms of what I would like to see in the 18 Pro Max, I've been thinking about this. I think add some more battery, make it thicker. I'm fine with that. I know some people hate thick phones, but I'll take all the battery I can get. I'm sure they're going to upgrade the camera. There's not a lot I would change about it, maybe different colors, but to be honest, I'm pretty happy with this iPhone at the moment, and I couldn't say that about the 16 Pro. I was pretty negative about that, so it's kind of nice to be comfortable with my phone again and enjoying using it again.
Do you think that things are plateaued?
Yeah, but luckily they've plateaued, in my opinion, at a good time, because Apple have had tendencies, and I briefly mentioned Macs, they plateaued for years with bad keyboards and bad designs that didn't work. So luckily they've plateaued at, I think, a time where the iPhone's in a strong position, if you like iPhones, which I know you two don't. But for me, I really like it. And I don't really see any, I say this every year, but I don't see any big interest for me in upgrading to the 18 Pro Max, maybe the foldable, which I know we're going to get onto. I'm just 6 months on. I'm very happy with it. We'll see what it's like for the next 6 months until the new lot come out. But I need to start taking more photographs now the sun's come out.
Yeah. So
did you use the word plateau on purpose, Ted? Because they call it the camera plateau.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was the, wasn't it? Don't forget, it was the iconic plateau.
Yes, yeah.
So you mentioned the Fold there. You think that all the rumours are true and Apple are going to jump on board with the folding thing? And do you think it's going to be a Pixel Fold original style books type passport one? Or what do you think?
Yeah, I was a sceptic. I think when I first came on here with Steve, it must be over a year ago now, I said they wouldn't release it this year and it would be next. But I think they probably are going to release it this year. There's too much evidence now. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm going to find interesting about it is how they handle the price versus the features. Because from what I understand about folding phones, they often don't get the best cameras. And I think if Apple are going to charge... could be $2,200 and they'll no doubt charge the same in pounds. Yeah. You know, they need to put the best tech in there and they need to put the best cameras in there. And as far as I'm aware, and I'm not sure if it's still the same with Samsung, for example, but am I right in thinking that the folding phones, they never get the top-end cameras?
They're arguing that the newest inversion of the Samsung One, Joe, is going to get equivalent of the candy bar now, aren't they?
Yeah, there's some good rumours there. I mean, they adopted the main lens on the 7 Fold, didn't they? So maybe they are going to add a better telephoto this year with it. I'm not sure. That's the rumours, but let's see. I mean, there is stiff competition out there for foldables this year because the Honor Magic V6 looks very impressive. It's got IP68 and 69 dust and water resistance. And they've actually shown the device opening and closing underwater, which is really impressive. For anyone who's skeptical or worried about the durability of foldables, that really does help with that, doesn't it? Like having IP rating on there.
Yeah.
And that's even thinner form factor with a bigger battery. The battery is really smart, actually. It's thinner and it has, I think, 30% more silicon carbon in there. So there's some really impressive battery tech there. I mean, Samsung are going to come big. And I think Oppo with their N6, that looks like a wonderful foldable as well. I think a few people in the Miwi group already got their eyes on that one. So, yeah, there's some really good foldables coming out. But no doubt Apple's will be good. It'd be interesting what software they have with it as well, because that is a key thing for a foldable device, something specifically for the Fold.
I think size-wise, it might be similar to the Fold, the Samsung Fold, just because Samsung make the screens for Apple, don't they? And I'm assuming Samsung are going to make the screens for this as well. I'm a little bit worried about the cost of this thing, and I'm a little bit worried about the cost of AppleCare on this. I think Apple tend to charge a premium anyway. And if you look at it as 17 Pro Maxes, you know, you're going to be talking £2,000, aren't you, at least, plus AppleCare. And like Steve used to say, I'm still not sold on the durability of folding phones. I know they've got a lot better, but I'm still not completely convinced. And I think it's always a little bit arrogant for Apple users to think, but Apple can solve this problem. They're not making the screens. You know, it's going to be Samsung, I would assume. So a lot of that technology they're going to borrow. So I think they're going to have to sort of mitigate the design around that, aren't they?
So do you think that they're going to go with the passport thing, or does the latest evidence suggest, like you said, much more like a, you know, what Samsung are doing? Because there's talk about, Joe, there's talk about a Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 8 wide, isn't there? Which means that if Samsung are start making screens for that passport size thing, PIP, then maybe they've got that stuff and Apple could do that, no?
The other thing is, though, with Apple, do they want to cannibalize? The iPad Mini, I don't really think they care about. I mean, they don't sell many of those. And I know that the people who like iPad Minis really, really like iPad Minis. But I don't think they're worried about losing sales of the iPad Mini. But maybe they don't want to cannibalize sales of the iPad too much. That's a consideration they have to think about. The other thing that slightly worries me is when I look at iPad OS, they've done a lot since it first came out, but it's still not, I don't think it still takes advantage of the screen real estate. So are they going to do something to change that with a fold, or is it going to be, you know, like, I remember, I think it was the iPhone 13 or 14 Pro Max, you could rotate the home screen, and that was seen as a big thing because it was a big phone, so you could use it in landscape, and then they took that away. So I'm not convinced. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do to make it worth it, to utilize that extra screen real estate, which I think Samsung do quite a good job of from the foldables that I've played with.
Going with the price quickly,
yeah.
I think Apple are just confident that Apple people, I didn't say sheep there, see, I stopped myself saying it.
Just call me Sean.
Yeah. they will pay the price regardless, right? They're confident Apple people will pay the price. And Apple people aren't going to be looking at, I said they're stiff competition, but they aren't going to be looking at the competition because they are just Apple people. With that in mind, that's what they're doing. And I think, do you know what, they don't want everyone to move from Pro Max to the Fold. They want it to be
complimentary
flagship.
The true flagship, a real, I put a note here and I can't find it now.
Standard bearer.
Basically a status device. That's what I put it as, a status device. Yeah. They want it to be their top end that not everyone's got. And that's probably what it will do. And then you'll see that in the marketing as well. It'll be, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, I could be wrong.
I don't know. I think they when I look at what the Vision Pro that came out, that's really expensive to the point that they haven't launched it in Spain yet, as far as I'm aware. So I think sometimes they do outprice their customers.
It's been abandoned, hasn't it?
No, they did release a second version, but I think you can buy it in the UK and the USA, but it's not available in Spain as far as I'm aware, and I haven't seen it in the Apple stores, just because I think it costs too much. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe they might. The first version could be more expensive, and then they try and bring down the price in the future. That's certainly something that could happen. But Apple have outpriced people before, and when I look at what they're doing with things like the MacBook Neo now, bringing a laptop out that's what, £500-600, they are trying to cater to a wider variety of people as well. So I don't know. The Mac Rumors article said I think it was $2,200, and they tend to price things around the same in pounds. How much is a Fold, Galaxy Fold new? Is it about 1,800 ish?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. Not
so it'd be
far
more expensive than that then.
I'm still of the opinion, Pip, that Apple should have done the flip phone. I think they could have killed the market instead of letting Motorola take the flip market. And I think that Apple fans, a huge number of Apple fans, would really love the flip phone. I don't get why Apple haven't done that and they've gone for the bigger one. But maybe I'm naive.
No, I 100% agree, because I think any people that have moved away from Apple has been for a Samsung Flip, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe Moto Flips as well in the US, because that's gained a little bit of market space there. So I think you're right, Ted. That is a miss for me. I mean, even when Steve was talking about it, he was convinced it was going to be an Apple Flip as well. It's a strange one.
Pip?
Yeah, I mean, I would have as a secondary device, because I have two phones, and we're going to get onto that, but I have an Oppo or Oppo. Oppo. And it was about €80, and it's terrible. But it's quite small, and for a secondary device, I would love a flip phone, because it would be quite a good size to fit in my pocket alongside my iPhone.
Yeah.
So. But then I also like having an Android to play with, so maybe I wouldn't go for it for that reason either. But I think Apple is that go big or go home thing, you know. I think they're just they're looking at the market and they just want a piece of it, you know. They work with Samsung, so they know the technology works. They've waited until, what, 7 or 8 generations of the folding phones from other companies to come out, and they're just ready to jump on board. What I will not have, though, even as an Apple not fan, because I hate that, but if an iPhone comes out that folds and everyone says, oh, and they've sorted the folding problems, no, come on, they haven't. That's that's a lot of research and development from other companies that have gone into something that they're going to you know, take advantage of, really.
You mentioned AppleCare earlier. I have no idea what AppleCare costs on top of a... Is there a kind of percentage figure that it's like if your phone's £1,000, then AppleCare is how much more?
Yes, so what I do, I pay for it monthly, and the reason I do that is because if you can buy it for 2 years up front. I know it's changed in the US, but I'm talking about in Europe at the moment. And I think it's about €200 or £200-ish for 2 years. But if you pay for it monthly, I think I pay €12 a month, and that's for loss and theft, which living in Barcelona is good coverage to have because people love stealing phones. They're sneaky as well. Yeah, really, that's what happened to my Note 10. And what happens with that is it just rolls on and on and on. So if I keep my phone for longer than 2 years, I can keep the AppleCare with it. I think in the USA now, they've got like a family AppleCare where you can put three or four devices under a certain monthly plan. So you could have your MacBook, your AirPods, your iPhone, and it's all covered under AppleCare. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, they haven't brought that to Europe yet. But so there are different ways of doing it. I actually don't I don't have it on this current phone. I had it on my 16 Pro because I used to get it with every phone, and I never claimed, and I just thought, well, it's getting to the point now where I'll just have to pay for something if, you know, if I break a screen. But I have a screen protector on it, and I have a case, so for me it's not so much of a problem. But it adds up. That's the thing. If you have six Apple devices and you have Apple Care on everything, you know, it starts to add up.
Yeah, yeah. Joe, you work in retail in the industry. Are people buying Apple stuff, and are they all taking out Apple Care as well, or is it something that it's just most people just kind of think, oh, I can't, no, I'm taking the risk to save the money?
It's an interesting balance. Like there is people that take insurance from us, but there is a high majority of people that say, "Oh, actually, I've got Apple Care already."
Right.
And from all accounts, Apple Care is a really good service. People I've spoken to that have been to Apple stores and used Apple Care, they say really good things about it.
Yeah.
I think it is renowned to be really good, and I think with a foldable device, Apple's first one as well, and probably many Apple users' first foldable device, as they've probably not used any Android ones out there, it would be good reassurance to have Apple Care on there. But yeah, is it going to be super expensive? I don't know.
I suppose if people do it like Pip does monthly, it probably wouldn't have such a huge impact on people's kind of, you know, revenue and turnover of their spendable money.
And if you're putting $2,000 on a phone, it's good to have that reassurance, isn't it? I mean, you'd want some kind of insurance, wouldn't you?
I think I would. If I was spending £2,300 on a phone, whatever it was, I think I would want to be insuring that in some way. And it sounds like Apple Care is the way to do it. It can't be argued.
Because a lot of people talk about... Sorry, mate.
the theft and loss protection is really, really important, I think. If you live in a city, it's nice having that peace of mind. If it's just for accidental damage, well, you can kind of mitigate that, but you can't mitigate against someone who distracts you on a metro and steals your phone. I mean, you can do your best, but it happens.
So what's the drill down on that, Pip? Have you ever claimed it? How many times you claim it, or how does it work?
So the way it works, actually, this happened with a guy I work with about 2 months ago. 2 months ago, yeah. And the way it works is you have to get a police report.
Right.
So you go to the local police station. They're used to this in Barcelona. There's like a line. You go in, you sign a piece of paper. And then you make the claim to Apple. You send that. And then you have to take it off your iCloud account. So you have to completely disconnect it from your iCloud account. And then once they've got the police report, and you've taken it off the iCloud account, they will you can buy another phone at a discounted price. It's much cheaper. It's like €100 or something. And I think it's two claims in a year, in 12 months,
right.
I think.
Okay.
That's reasonable.
But it's, you know, you're talking €100 as opposed to, you know, 1,500 euros. Yeah. If you get
it's
your phone stolen,
excess, so it's essentially isn't it? Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Reasonable, I think.
Okay. And if you kind of lose it, the same applies. So theft and loss is the same, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you still have, I know in Spain, you still have to, even if you lose it, you still have to get a police report to say you've lost it.
You go to the phone queue.
Yeah, but I think there's in some countries, if you lose it, just the deactivation of iCloud is enough, because then you can't use it. So, and they block the serial number. So I think it varies from country to country, to be honest.
Okay.
Because Apple do have the ability to block it worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a big push from networks for them to do that. Because there's been a lot of theft from stores on devices where people have broken into stores and stole Apple devices. But of course, they don't want to do that because that will affect their image worldwide. So they won't do it because networks only have the ability to block IMEIs within the country they're in.
Right.
So it's a bit strange.
I know, actually, the ones that go disappearing in Barcelona, they go to Morocco first, and then within 2 days they're in China. Because I see it, I'm part of a Barcelona Reddit group, and every week there's someone that's had their phone stolen and they've tracked it, and it's in China within 2 days. I mean, it's incredibly quick.
Wow.
It's mad, yeah.
It's a system. Yeah. There you go. Right, okay. Yeah, what have we got next, Pip?
Yeah, so it brings me on to my next comment about. I've been considering for a few months now a higher end Android phone because I've got this Oppo A5, which I'm not surprised if you've never seen it. I mean, it is a phone from 1998. The screen's washed out. It's slow. The fingerprint reader hardly ever works. I mean, I don't actually really need a very decent second phone because it's my Spanish work phone. The reason I don't have both numbers in one phone is at the weekend I can just throw this thing away and I don't have to think about it and don't have to look at it until Monday. Plus, I like playing with Android a little bit and testing things. I probably could use two numbers on one phone, but I quite enjoy having an Android to play with. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking about the, I was torn between Samsung and Pixel. And I know, Joe, you've got some comments on that, haven't you? You're thinking, why am I only thinking of Samsung and Pixel?
Yeah, you're blessed with so many options, unlike our friends in the US, who I feel very sorry for. You've got so many things there. I mean, I would seriously consider Honor, Oppo, Vivo, even some really nice options out there. So why Google and Samsung only?
You know what it is, right? So I consider myself with iPhones and technology generally, I'm quite knowledgeable. But I feel like with Android, I'm a complete normob. And I went into a Xiaomi store, I don't know, a year ago, and they, you know, they sell scooters, they sell vacuum cleaners, air purifiers, and then they've got this big desk of phones, and I had absolutely no idea which phone was the highest end, which was the medium. You know, trying to understand which just completely fried my brain. And I sometimes feel with Android, knowing what each company does and what they specialize in and what's their top of the range. And I find it so confusing sometimes. And I guess with the Pixel, I know, you know, you've got the Pixel 10 Pro and you've got the Samsung S26 Ultra, and they're the two top end devices. And I've played with both. And I think the reason I like the Pixel is I think it's the most similar. It's a bit of a cliche, I know, but I think it's the most similar to an iPhone in terms of Android, because I pretty much use all of Google services anyway on my iPhone.
I would argue these Chinese OEMs, they've done a lot to replicate what Apple do. So actually, they could potentially be more familiar. So Honor, for example, you have to turn the app drawer on. It, as standard, there's no app drawer. So they've set it up very much like an iPhone in that sense. So, yeah, I mean, if you are struck on Samsung and Google, I would say Google would feel more familiar for you, both in the shape and size of it. It's like an iPhone and the simplicity of the software. But, yeah, I think you really should consider one of the others. I mean, I know I love Honor and I bang on about them, but they are fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I haven't actually played with an Honor before. There's a company in Spain. It's like the Spanish curries is called FNAC, F-N-A-C, and you go in there and they've got all of the brands. And the nice thing about being here is, you know, you've got, and I think because Mobile World Congress comes here, they have pretty much every phone. And that, I mean, that S26 was out on the floor the day of release. It was super quick. I think that's because Mobile World Congress was here. So they get all of the good phones and the interesting phones. And I go in there a lot and I play with different ones, but I don't think I've played with an Honor, but definitely I've played with the Xiaomi, and I quite like Xiaomi, but there's something about the launcher I don't like. I can't put my finger on why.
A lot of people say that.
I don't know what it is.
I do tend to agree with you on the Xiaomi. Whenever I've had one, I didn't like it much. But to be fair, I haven't used Hyper OS 3, which is supposed to be, you know, a bit of a shift, and a shift possibly towards what Joe's saying, towards Apple stuff. My Honor 400 Pro Pip, the one thing that annoys me about it so much is that the software is just so Apple-ish, and they've just copied it, and there's so much of it that's just copied. So I think what Joe is saying is right. If you had an Honor for a week, and you would just be straight at home with it.
But then it's the devil and the angel on my shoulder, you know, because the angel says, oh, yeah, get something that's similar to iPhone, be in your comfort zone. And the devil goes, no, get something Russian that you won't be able to work out. and it's that, you know, and that's my problem. I mean, it's a dichotomy for me because I don't know whether I want to, you know,
I think you'd get both, or go a bit crazy. I think you would get both from Honor because you'd have the devil and the angel there, because there is a lot still to unpack and look into, but there'll still be that little bit of familiarity there at the same time.
There's also the physical Joe, because the My Pixel 9 looks just like certainly an iPhone used to look like. They physically aped it, apart from the island on the back, but the edges and the sides. You,
the dimensions even, yeah. Yeah.
So I think Pip would feel at home with a Pixel. I can see why you are veering towards that over a Samsung, certainly, Pip.
Yeah, I really like Pixels. I've played with them a lot. And I'm not – I mean, I do use AI, but, you know, I think they're quite clever, Pixels. That's how I'd describe them. They've got some nice software tweaks. They're very clever. They're very they do things for you. They're very proactive, I feel.
Yep. And Material 3 Expressive is just really, really nicely worked out. Whenever I look at my Pixel and play with it for a few minutes, I think, why am I not using this? Which we'll come to later. But it's just so nicely, you know, the whole UI, the more time goes on, is, yes, some will argue it's more Apple-ish, but I don't see that so much. The biggest thing about my phone, my Pixel 9, that I think is Apple-ish is the actual shape of it and the sides and the flat edges. I think you'd like it. You should try a Pixel.
Yeah, and
it's
I think
AirDrop now as well, isn't it? Pixel 10 series. That's like the AirDrop.
They reverse engineered it, apparently, didn't they?
Last time I read something about that, they were not sure if it was going to be ongoingly working, though, because it had been done against Apple. They were expecting Apple to block it, weren't they? Or did they get past that?
I think if it had been anyone else but Google, Apple would have blocked it. But I think they're letting it slide because it doesn't affect them that much. And they do so much business with Google. You know, they pay them billions.
Oh, they're in bed big time.
Yeah. So I think they've just turned a blind eye to it. Okay. I think if it had been a smaller manufacturer, they may have done. But no.
It wouldn't have helped their Gemini talks, would it? If they had
honestly, don't get me started on Siri. Oh, Siri.
Yeah, you're not
so bad. It's so bad.
Don't think you're alone. Right. So, did you go to MWC? I mean, you were in Barcelona, for goodness sake.
I mean, I went past it on my scooter. Does that count?
A Xiaomi scooter.
No, it's not actually. It's a 9. Oh. I did have a Xiaomi, but the Xiaomi was very unreliable, which is another reason I don't like Xiaomi. The tires kept bursting all the time. I went past it, and You know, I actually looked at going in, and the tickets, they start at €1,000 and they go up to, it's like €5,000 for a VIP. Yeah, €5,000 for a VIP pass where you can network with leaders and all this stuff. And it's just like, for someone like me who just, you know, I'm not in that industry, but I would quite like to go and look at the new phones, and, you know, it's 10 minutes away from me on the metro. I don't want to spend £1,000 to go in for €1,000 to go in for a day.
No.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it really surprises me because, like, I'd never thought the tickets cost that much. I bet the brands get loads of free tickets, though, that they can give out, surely. And, like, all the journalists and content creators and influencers and that, they surely don't pay the prices. I mean, I know two of my friends were taken to MWC. Like, Ashdust Tech was taken by Honor, and my friend Geeky Stuff was taken by Xiaomi. But that was for the whole weekend as well, the whole time, rather. Yeah, so, yeah, that surprised me. Do you think many people pay?
Without going into my job too much, I actually work with hotels. So for hotels, it's great, but sometimes the hotels are completely booked by one company for the entire weekend, which is good and bad. It's good for the hotel, but if you're a tourist wanting to come to Barcelona, the prices of the hotels go up crazily expensive. But I think, and this comes on to a point I was going to make, like, it's MWC is great, and I see some amazing videos, but when you live in Barcelona, it's really hard to stay positive sometimes. I nearly got wiped out on my scooter by a Snapdragon Mercedes blacked out van, and then I was just going along the cycle lane, and there was just a content creator stood in the cycle lane just doing a video, completely oblivious to the cycle lane. And when we started beeping him and ringing our bells, so to speak, he just looked at us as if we were the problem, you know. And it's just the whole city gets taken over by these people. And as much as I love technology, I do curse a little bit sometimes every year. I think for 2 years, 2020 and 2021, it wasn't on because of COVID. And the tickets were a lot cheaper before that, as far as I remember. But since COVID, the prices have just gone up and up and up. And I think the people are just getting, I don't know if it's this drive for content, but I think people are just doing more outrageous videos, taking more unnecessary risks. You know, there's a guy on the metro, and he's doing like a TikTok, and he's got his Mobile World Congress lanyard on, and everyone else that's going to work is just like, mate, we just want to go to work. Could you stop dancing, you know? And I feel like this drive for content has kind of turned Mobile World Congress. It's just a bit of a circus when you live here, that's all. Anyway, rant over.
Yeah.
No, it's a good rant.
Yeah, I do wonder if tickets for other events are similarly priced now. Like, for example, the boat show, which we used to go to in Southampton, or the car show at it used to be at Earl's Court. I wonder if are all of these events stupid money?
So the interesting story about the boat show, I used to manage the gym at the Grand Harbour Hotel in Southampton. Right. And when the boat show was on, they used to close the hotel car park so that they could rent the space out to boats, which was great. But then, of course, the hotel guests and the gym members who wanted to use the facilities couldn't park for 2 weeks. and we used to just get complaints. And so I know it's not a uniquely Barcelona problem, but I do feel like it's like a whirlwind because it's so condensed. The airport is chaos. I mean, I had to fly out on one of the days that everyone was coming, leaving Barcelona, and just the chaos at the airport. And I understand, you know, it's very good for the economy of Barcelona. It's the hotels make a lot of money, but I do think the pricing is a little bit unnecessary, you know, because if you want to attract normal people, well, maybe they don't. Maybe they, you know, they just want to attract influencers. But I just think it's a bit of a shame.
Yeah. Or as Joe says, firms that are paying for people's tickets anyway. So all of the pricing is based on the likelihood that Samsung or Xiaomi or Oppo or whoever else it is are buying the tickets to send their influencers or their motivators.
Yeah, I think that's how it works. I think I wouldn't go unless I was sponsored because just the price of the ticket, then you've got to think about your flights, the hotels, and then you're spending money, because if you're in Barcelona, I'm going to have some beers in Barcelona, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And some good food. Yeah, some lovely food as well. Yeah, I do envy you.
No, but it's like, you know, when you live anywhere, it's a beautiful city, and I've been here 8 years, but it's just one of the things, you just get used to it, it becomes normal. And Mobile World Congress being here becomes normal. The first 2 years I was here, I was like, oh, it's amazing, and I saw like influencers that I knew in the street, and it was amazing. But it goes from amazing to, okay, this is annoying me now.
This is pissing me off now.
Yeah. Like, I just want to go to work. Can you please not stand in the cycle lane?
And you've got a bit of a rant about EE as well. I didn't know EE was in Spain, but do carry on.
They're not. So, well, basically, I'm grandfathered in. I've had the same number for 12 years or something. And I'm grandfathered in for free EU roaming.
Right.
And I can't change my contract. It's £30 a month, and it has been for, you know, it's just gone up actually because of inflation. And I'm getting, it's a terrible deal. But any other UK network that I had over here would, they have a thing, Joe, you'll know more about this than me. It's called the Fair Usage Allowance.
Fair Usage Allowance, yeah.
So I can only be abroad for so many days, even with free EU roaming, with free roaming. However, the way it's worked with EE, I've been here 8 years, and every month I get a text saying, hey, welcome to Spain. Why are you here? You know, and they just like, oh, this has been going on for 8 years, and I'm still using the same contract. So I can't really move away from them while I'm still in Spain. And I've always been able to access my account online. And about a month ago, I tried to log in, and it just said, oh, sorry, we can't do this at the moment. Try again later. And I'm, okay, I'll try again later. And this has been going on for a month now, and I phoned tech support, they've escalated it, they've tried a new login details. And I believe I was listening to Kev on Tech Talk UK, who I think had a similar issue, I think it was with Now TV. And it's just one of those really annoying problems that I can't now access my account, I can't pay bills. So I'm literally paying bills by text message. I have to text pay to 150 and then the last four digits of my credit card every month to pay my bill, because I can't access my account online. And it's kind of crazy that they can't resolve the problem. You know, it's 2026 and I can't look at my account.
Can you look at your account if you're in the UK?
No. I tried that as well.
That's weird.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It just says, I'll try to log in now and see what it says. But
they want to dump you off of your grandfather rights, do they?
I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I get like, it's about 60 gig a month or something, and I pay about €30. But I also get included TNT Sports, which means I can watch the Champions League.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, that alone's £30 a month on its own. So it's kind of not a bad deal.
When you say it's bad value, that's actually very good. Yeah.
Because I get that included. So the fact that every time I go back to England, I go, oh, welcome home. They haven't clicked on that I'm not living there yet. But, yeah, it would just be nice to be able to log back into my account again, I think.
Strange, isn't it?
I mean, technically, technically it's not made to be there permanently.
No. Well, I've been waiting for 8 years for them to catch on, but they haven't. So,
yeah.
If anyone's listening from EE, my name's Jeff, and I live in Swansea.
My name is Jeff.
Oh, well, I hope you get that sorted out somehow. Sounds a bit of a pain. Perhaps you can get some help from Joe.
I've been a bit moany this episode, haven't I? I've been a bit ranty.
Well, that's what we like.
I tell you what, you've got the opportunity now to shine and tell us about your app that we invite our guests to highlight.
And then you kind of put a damper on it because you told me it's only available on iOS. It's not available on Android. So, oh, dear. Well, anyway, so anyone who has an iPhone who's listening to this, I use Flighty. And it's an app that allows you to, well, it basically does everything involved with getting a plane. So you put your flight number in and it will track where the plane is now. So 24 hours before my plane arrives, I can see the 12 stops that it's got before it arrives to Barcelona. So say it's going from Marrakesh to, I don't know, Bournemouth, and it's 6 minutes late. They then calculate how late it will be when it arrives in Barcelona based on weather and air traffic control. And it's really accurate. It's amazing how you can track your flight, you know, 24 hours before and know if you're going to be on time. You get gate information before the airport picks it up. It's really nicely designed. It looks great. And I've been flying back to England a lot over the last 2 months. And it's saved me a lot. It saved me many times. Like, my family live on the Isle of Wight, and I was flying from Southampton Airport, and Flighty said, look, your plane's going to be an hour late. So I just got a boat an hour later. So rather than sitting at an airport for an hour, It's just such a good app. And you can pay monthly for the premium features. You can pay yearly, but you can also just pay, I think it's $4.99 for a week, which is what I do. So if I'm going to fly, I'll just pay the $4.99 and that covers me for a week. And I get all the premium features, which will help me work out where I'm going.
Cool. Very good. Yeah, it's a bit of some of these apps that just seem to be locked into iOS, but also I think the other way around. You know, there are apps in Android that are not open as well. It's a bit of a shame, really, I suppose. But there you go. Anyway, there you go, Flighty, and link in the show notes to that, and Pip recommends it. So thanks a lot, Pip. There's some interesting stuff going on there. And we are going to head now into the news section. I'll tell you what, Pip, we've got time for a couple of stories here. Do you want to pick a couple of stories out of those five in our list? Would you rather we pick them?
I'm looking now.
Okay.
I mean, So the Titan 2 Elite would be good because I know absolutely nothing about it.
That's a QWERTY device.
Google Play before you pay. I kind of like that. I'm not entirely sure what it is, but I think there might be something similar on iOS. So I might wait until you talk about that and then see if I can chip in.
Okay. Well, the Titan 2 Elite is a QWERTY device, a bit like the Clicks keyboard that's forthcoming. At MWC, they kind of gave us more details about what that's about and that it's coming soon. It's supposed to be available to Kickstarter backers in March, but I don't think anyone's got one yet. I could be wrong, but it does look a nice little device, and we thought we would just mention that it's still coming, and it's coming in March. And do you know anything more about that, Joe?
No, not too much, but I asked a friend that's had hands-on, and he said it is a chunky boy. It is a chunky one. But if you don't mind that, I do really like the look of it, and the orange one's quite intriguing. So
I can't get past the whole thing that it feels like going back 15 years, though. I don't know. Did you ever have a BlackBerry, Pip, or did you do the BlackBerry thing? He's gone. He's cleared off and left us, look. Okay, let's carry on then, and hopefully he'll come back. Google Play, pay before you play, as I understand it, is a new thing that's coming in, but it only affects, at the moment, I think it only affects games, and it gives you the option in the Play Store to get, I'm trying to think of the right word, to get a 60 minutes of playtime before you have to pay up. So 60 minutes, and I think Pip is right, that probably is to do with the same kind of scheme as iOS. I'm floundering around with my words because I'm getting messages from Pip here.
At the same time,
No, sorry.
He's back.
You completely cut off and everything went silent. So I missed about a minute of that, and I didn't want to say it on the microphone in case.
Okay, no worries.
Interrupting.
You seem to leave Teams. I'm not sure what happened. Weird. But
no worries. No worries.
Welcome back.
We're back. So I was just saying that pay before you play, I think, is just for games on the Play Store, and it gives you 60 minutes of playtime before you've got to cough up. A bit like old shareware or whatever it was called back in the day. And what I was asking you when you disappeared was whether or not with the Titan 2 Elite QWERTY keyboarded device, you ever, back in the day, were ever in on the kind of whole BlackBerry thing?
No, I never had a BlackBerry. I had maybe you did have a BlackBerry. I had a BlackBerry. What was the BlackBerry with the force touch screen? I think it did have a keyboard, but it was one of the first. It was like a touch screen with a keyboard, but you had to press quite hard on the screen.
Right.
But I've never. I, I've apart from Nokias, which was a long time ago,
yeah.
I haven't used physical keyboards for a long time. And I think I mentioned last time, is it the Clicks keyboard that came out?
Yes.
And I wasn't completely convinced by it. Although I will say that the new version that they've brought out seems a lot more compelling.
MagSafe one.
Yeah, the magnet one. Yeah.
That's the one that Steve is favouring, is the... Yeah, the one that clacks on the back. But he totally agrees with you and me. I've got the Clicks keyboard for the Pixel 9 here. And I was talking to Steve about it last week, and we agreed that it's just comically tall. It makes your long candy bar phone just comically even longer than a opened up Motorola flip phone. So...
I think it does bode well for the Clicks stuff. I think it is really nicely built and premium looking. Yeah.
I'm sure. I just don't get this whole QWERTY thing. I know that our friend Jim Fowle is a huge fan of the whole line, but whenever I put one in my hands, I can't wait to get rid of it again. And anyway, there you go. And
I do feel though, actually, that just while we're on the side, Apple's predictive text is pretty terrible at the moment. I think I said this 6 months ago, and it doesn't seem to have got any better. And I noticed on my Android, I actually seem to type more accurately than on my iPhone.
Right. I think Google are certainly developing Gboard. Do you use Gboard on your iPhone?
No, I don't. So I use the iOS one.
Yeah, so I think if you use Gboard on it, download and install Gboard, I think you'd notice the difference. That seems to be what a lot of Apple users are doing by default. Might be worth a try.
Yeah, try that.
And talking of just while we're talking about QWERTY phones, there's also this new phone that was again an MWC thing, I think, which is called the iFrog. And this iFrog square phone rotates to reveal a QWERTY keyboard, or if you rotate it the other way, it reveals a Game Boy setup. So it's an interesting device, and it reminded me immediately of the Motorola Flip Out from 2010, which is really, really similar in lots of ways. But it kind of slides around. So, you know, these manufacturers are trying really hard with QWERTY. They're trying to enthuse people about the whole retro thing and the BlackBerry thing, but I just don't buy it.
I quite like it myself, but I don't know. Maybe just as toys, though.
You're obviously the target audience then. So yeah. There you go. Right.
I think as you get older, you get like a fond. You have fond memories of things in the past, and I think people want to bring that back. Like, do you remember record players? They came back.
Oh yeah.
Then I was thinking the other day, I mean, like, I used to go to Blockbusters with my friends and pick a video out, and it was kind of a night, you know, we'd meet up on the Friday, we'd go and choose a film, and now everything's downloaded and it's easy access. And I think sometimes we look back at things like physical keyboards and physical media, and it's just, it makes us think about the past. And I don't know if that necessarily means that there's a market for those things to come back. I just think it's nice to think about.
Yeah, 90% of the time you get hands-on with it and it disappoints.
And then you've got Gen Z who are trying just anything to do something different and to step outside the frame. So, you know, compact cameras are coming back and Polaroid cameras, instant printed photographs to put on your fridge, back to magnets and fridges. And as you say, record players and tape, FIO are making tape players and CD players. The whole retro movement is really strong, it would appear anyway. And I've got a record player. In fact, I've got two. And I've about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I started recollecting all my old records. I love it. I really, really enjoy using them. But again, you're right, Pip. It's to do with nostalgia more than anything else. I can't tell the difference in the sound quality or anything like some people might claim to do. I just like the hobbyist bit of it.
Yeah. It's like me with watches. I love mechanical watches for the same reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we all like our little things like that. Anyway, right. Okay, Joe, anything to report from your week or fortnight or whatever it's been?
Yeah, I mean, I won't go into all of what I've written down here, but I'll quickly say that I'm really enjoying the Signature. My SIM is still in there. Mm. It's a beautiful device. It's really thin and light. It is, however, a little bit slippery, even with the supplied case. The supply case quickly is a hard plastic, and it's really snug on there, but it is quite a nice case, and it's got MagSafe, so Steve would be happy with that. It does expose the buttons on the side, but I don't mind that. I think it's quite nice actually feeling the physical buttons. And there's also a gap at the bottom, again, which I don't mind, actually. You can take your SIM in and out quite easily, and the speaker's revealed in all its glory. Mm-hmm. The back of the phone, although it's got that texture, like I said, it is slippery, but I do love that texture on there. The screen is wonderful. It's rather large, and in particular wide, I've found. We both mentioned that, didn't we, Ted, when we spoke about it? So one-hand use is quite difficult, but I think that's the case with most flagships these days. Mm-hmm. It really is top-end, with an always-on display, which I know you're very happy about as well, Ted, a proper one.
Yeah, it's great. Hurrah!
Yeah, the camera system is very nice. I need to test it more, but I really do enjoy the camera system so far. It's got 3 50-megapixel sensors. The main and the telephoto have decently sized sensors. The ultra wide, not so much. But that is fun to use. A little bit distorted, but I quite like that element of it. The telephoto up to about around 30x in good light is pretty good. I quite like Moto's processing, which I've mentioned before. I really should put a post together maybe and share some images, what I've taken so far. Battery life is decent enough for me. It's not the best out there, but it's decent enough. I haven't tested gaming. Yeah, go on.
The battery I was just a bit surprised by, given that my Edge 60 Pro had 6,000 and this bigger, better, faster, more demanding device, it's just 5,200. And I was just kind of surprised that they didn't put the same 6,000 in. But we might be back to that whole EU thing again, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of things. I think they've really wanted to make it really thin, haven't they, and light. I think the thing they've wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't mind a Signature Ultra that was a bit thicker, actually. It would be quite nice. Mm-hmm. I haven't tested gaming too much, but I'm pretty certain it would breeze through most things with the 8 Elite Gen 5 packed inside, and paired with the 165 hertz, which will work with certain games. Refresh rate, rather, which would be good on certain games. Yep. So it could be a really good game device. Mm-hmm. I think overall, $899 is full price. It is fantastic. I could recommend it at that. But no doubt you'll get it cheaper throughout the year. Keep an eye on Motorola's website. And also second-hand from early adopters, which you've done, Ted, haven't you? So
I did, yeah. I got a very good price from one of our lovely people on our PSC Classifieds. So, yeah, totally keep an eye on second-hand from people you know and can trust, at least.
Yeah, I'm going to start putting together my video review, because I've only got it till the 27th. So I need to get cracking on with that. But what it does really make me excited for even more so now is the Razer Fold. So hopefully we get hands on with that at some point, Ted.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I had an email from Wilkin today from Moto PR, and he was basically saying that they haven't got any schedules for the Razer Fold yet. They doesn't seem to know anything about it. The Moto Pen Ultra, he clearly didn't know anything about that either. I sent him a link to my review, which he was very happy with. Even though I did put in there that the PSC tag team partnership, Joe is going to be doing the video bit of it, and it's coming soon, so the pressure's on now. You've got to do it.
Yeah, I've got you now, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm glad you like it. I really like mine too. I think it's it's become, as I was saying to Wilkin, that I think probably the best Motorola phone that I've ever used. And whether the Fold, the Razr Fold, is going to be able to up that, I don't know. This has come for me at the same time as the Edge 60 Neo, and also the the Razr 60 Ultra, which you sent over, which is our PSC stock one. So I've got loads of Motorola stuff going on at the moment, and I've got reviews coming out my ears from all of them, and I'll put links in the show notes to all of those. But I'm very impressed with the Edge 60 Neo. Maybe next week when we've got more time in our open door show, we can go in a bit more deeply into some of these Motorola devices. We'll have a Moto week, particularly if no one turns up to join us. Sorry, back to you, Joe. Anything else?
No, I didn't want to take too much more time because we've got your throws or your spread, Ted's spread, we call it, don't we? And we've got photos to talk about. So, yeah, I'll leave that there from me.
Okay. Well, as I say, I think that the Edge 60 Neo is a spankingly good update. Really, really good update. I didn't think it was going to be. It looks exactly the same as the Edge 50 Neo, and in many ways it is. But I was really surprised at some of the ways in which it's better and more preferable, if I can use that phrase, more preferable. Anyway, we'll come back to that another week when we've got more time. The Motorola Signature, as I say, I'll come back to that. We'll do a bit more on that, and I'll tell you about my more direct thoughts on it. The Razr 60 Ultra, I've not done a review on, but it's kicking about, and we've got it long-term between us, so we'll be able to come back to that as well in time. Your Honor Magic 8 Lite is here, and I did that battery test on it, and it was really impressive. Now, I tested it over the course of 2 weeks, okay? I didn't put a SIM card in it. I charged it to 100%. This is the device that's got a, 7,500 milliamp battery?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, and I charged it up, took the SIM card out, and just had it connected to... It had your O2 SIM card in there, and it was it was connected to O2, which is a 4G signal here. It was connected to my Wi-Fi, and for 2 weeks I just let the thing sit there and didn't touch it. And I occasionally went and checked what the battery was, and it took 2 weeks to get down to 18%. Now, I know that's not real world use, so no one's going to be using it like that, but I was just very impressed that basically the standby battery, even connected to networks, was giving me that kind of performance. So very impressive. And we'll come to that another week as well, I guess, when we got a bit more time and when I've spent a bit more time with it as well. You've also sent me over the OnePlus Watch 2, which I haven't got to yet, but it looks very nice.
It is a very good looking watch, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. But to upend my Moto Watch fit, it's going to have to be really special. So watch out for some feedback on that one as well. Oh, that's it then. We're done. We'll get to the PSC photo of the week now. And we're going to pick one each. And I reckon, as Pip has been so quiet and well behaved for so long, you should go first.
I'd try, but I was on mute. So I've gone with Marrakesh, which I believe is how you say it, by Charles Winston, mm-hmm. taking on his Samsung S25 Ultra. Something about this image, I don't know, it feeds my monkey brain. It's like, it just looks like Marrakesh to me, even though it's, I think it's looking up through an open hole in the ceiling.
Right.
And you can see the blue sky, and I like the framing of it. I honestly don't know. It's just something about that picture that just made, as soon as I saw it as Marrakesh, I could imagine it being in Marrakesh, if that makes any sense. And I like photographs that kind of place you somewhere. And I kind of like the fact that the three sheets aren't quite symmetrical on the right, because everything else is. And I just think there's something about it that was like candy to my brain.
It might just be might just be a bit of art, mightn't it? It might just be a picture on the ceiling, because if you look on the top left, on the top left hand corner, you can see there's a wire or something going across the corner towards it. Anyway,
yeah, it could be.
No doubt, Charlie will tell us in due course what it is and what it is we're looking at. But to some degree, it doesn't matter, does it? Art is art, and it's a nice piece of art, Joe.
Yeah, I really like it. I think it is a gap in the ceiling, because you can see the light coming in at certain parts. See, in between the two sheets, there's like a light beaming through. So, but yeah, it's a very appealing shot. It does get your mind thinking.
The fact that we don't know is what makes it clever.
But Charlie takes some great photographs. He's in our Camera Creations MeWe crew, and we do a podcast every 2 or 3 weeks with that crowd as well, and Charlie's a key player in that one, so that's good. My pick is going to be, I don't know what this means, but it says Albert Schloss, which is a bar in Manchester, I think. David Hewitt's photograph of some skis in a rack, in Iraq and he's taken this with his Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 7 ruthlessly cropped it to make it portrait to fit the skis, and I just thought it was really nice, the texture and the shading and the roughness of the wood comes through very nicely. It's got slats going across which break up the lines going up as well. There's a couple of bits of red color in there which kind of stand out, and there's a nice rosewood kind of piece of wood down the bottom of the frame as well. I think that just worked really, really well. If you like portrait stuff, actually, it could be a screensaver, couldn't it? A wallpaper for a phone.
It's
the right shape for that. But any thoughts, Pip?
Yeah, it's all, as you said, it's the cropping, isn't it? It's all about the cropping with that, because it really focuses your attention. If it was a really wide shot and there are 50 other skis, it would just look like a sports shop. But the fact that it's so cropped in, and then you've got those little bits of red, I really like it, It would be a good wallpaper, actually.
It certainly would. Right, Joe?
Yeah, it's really, I love the colour palette on that one. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I found it really hard to pick this week. Firstly, can I say how amazing Photo of the Month competition is? It's unreal.
That's really running at the moment. I'll jump in and remind people of that. So if you want to vote on Photo of the Month, it's currently running. And as you say, Joe, a tough pick.
Very tough pick. So bravo to everyone in there. Secondly, even just the PSC photos group, there's some amazing photos going up. You can tell everyone's got hands on with some new toys and shooting away. So I'm going to put some honourable mentions, because there's loads that are fantastic shots. So Chris Bates has got some good shots in there of his son, and the one of the prison I really like. Chris Clayton also went to Morocco. We've got some lovely images there. Mark Mocken's got his hands on a 8 Pro from Honor, and so he's putting some lovely shots up. Gavin's loving his Lights phone, as we mentioned in that special. I really like the Enchanted shot he's put there. You've also got Ian Bundy, who's been out in China. I really love the race day shot, which is nice perspective. And the Blade Runner shot as well is really cool. But I've picked actually one that I don't think it's had the recognition it deserves. It was only put up yesterday, and I've, at the time of writing this and saying this now, I'm the only person to give it a thumbs up. It's an image by Paul Garner. He's titled it Co-op, and it's taken on his 17 Pro Max. And it's like a naked Barbie with just a pair of knickers on, like a very street sort of look. But what makes it for me is the little empty bottle. It's almost as if she's drunk it and just littered the floor with it, and it just got my mind racing. Maybe it's my crazy mind, but I quite like the image for that reason.
No, it wasn't the knockers.
I weren't going to say it, Ted, but yeah, anything with tits in, I am a fan.
It's why you like me on the podcast. I want to know where Ken's gone.
That's the thing.
Ken stood her up. That's what's happened.
Or maybe he's just thrown her out the car, you know? Like, he's found out she's cheating on him or something, and he's just thrown her out the car on the street.
It's a really interesting bit of street, isn't it? Which is, you know, urban kind of decay and chaos. And it would be interesting to know if Paul set it up, whether that doll was just there and he happened to see it there, or whether it was laying down and he decided to make her stand upright, or whether as I said earlier, art is art, and it's a very arty kind of shot for sure. Decent.
I'm trying to work out how big she is, because the bottle looks kind of small enough that she could drink out of as well.
That's what I mean. It's really intriguing, isn't it? It does get you thinking.
Very interesting shot indeed. So and I was surprised also that it got zero thumbs up until you decided to put yours on there.
He's got the two now.
I got two, right. Anyway, good stuff from all of those people. And just a quick reminder about the camera creations, because you mentioned Ian Bundy in there and Chris Clayton in there, and we have a good crowd. The whole crew and the good crowd going on there. Let's get to the classifieds. If you want to join our classifieds group, you'll have to email me and talk to me about it, because it is a closed group and members only. And I just wanted to mention Paul Granger. Does that name ring a bell? Actually, no, it was Paul Garner, wasn't it? So, Paul Garner took the photograph, the urban decay, and Paul Granger would like to jump into classifieds and say, kudos to Mark Surrey. Sometimes you meet the nicest people. I posted a classifieds in the group asking whether anyone had a Titan 2 they wanted to move on. Almost immediately, Mark replied to me. We agreed a deal and I sent the money. Turns out that he and I live on the opposite sides of Essex. We soon agreed to meet halfway so that he could just pass the phone to me. Things at my end went pear-shaped, he couldn't make it to meet after all. So Mark simply drove the whole way, delivered the phone to Paul's house, and he wanted to just give kudos to Mark, because it was an amazingly kind gesture, he says, and that Mark was a lovely guy. My first purchase on classifieds, he says, and it was a great success. So he wanted to just mention that. So nice little story. So thank you, Paul, for writing that, and well done to Mark. Mark Surrey, good guy.
Yeah, definitely. I saw that the interaction when Paul Granger asked if anyone had it available, actually, and Mark was very quick in there.
Good.
And this shows what the community we've got is all about. I love it.
Absolutely. Okay, my pick from the classifieds is Mark Gosling's Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra that Pip can buy. 256GB, 12GB version in sky blue, mint condition, with case and screen protector and all that gubbins, £750. So that was my pick. Joe, did you have a pick?
Yeah, much of what I liked is actually already sold. But we've got to mention Ted's TCL Next Paper 60 Ultra 5G.
Oh, right.
£375 or close to. He might be open to offers.
Yeah.
I think that's a good buy.
We'll make it £350.
There you are.
Because it was it's a really nice device for the right person. I sent it to the aforementioned Jim Fowle as well, and he had a really good play with it. And it's a nice device. It's an interesting bit of tech, lovely screen and all the rest of it. So there you go. Thanks ever so much, Pip, for joining us again today. It's been great to catch up with you. I hope your voice has not been too knackered by it.
No, I've been drinking pints of water between speaking, so I'm surviving.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Once you get your Android device, we'll have to get you back on and see what you've got.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll keep it a surprise.
Yeah.
We'll book you up sometime later in the year, hopefully, and we'll go again. Phoneshowchat.uk is our website, with two S's in the middle, don't forget. All the stuff we do is at MeWe, and the links are in the show notes to that. If you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that. It's at paypal.me/TedSalmon. And if you want to buy Joe a coffee, you got a coffee bought for you this week, didn't you, Joe?
Yes, John Terry, thank you very much.
That's nice, isn't it? Your first one, I think. So keep it rolling. paypal.me/hickey85 if you want to buy Joe one. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find everything else, at Podhub UK as well. And thanks to Steve for his audio plug-in this week. And we'll be back next week with an open door, our second open door show, Joe. Do you think anyone will turn up this time?
I hope so. I don't want to be Billy No Mates. No, to be fair, we'll crack on either way. But we
promise it won't
be
me.
It's far too early for Pip. But yeah, and then after that, our more scheduled show in 2 weeks' time will be with Steve Nutt, when he's talked to us about the changes in accessibility and so forth, and keep us up to date with that. So thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back next week. And until then... goodbye.